Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Boy, if there's one thing that we all know about, it's getting too busy.
Being too busy.
And you know, we think that it's just an individual choice.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is churches become too busy. Not just the pastor.
Yeah.
Not just individuals, but the church itself becomes way too busy.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter the size of the church either.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm Mark, and this is Dan.
This is Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. There's Kyle Bierman over there. And Halleck is on vacation.
He's on sabbatical.
I know they call it sabbatical.
It's not vacation. He's on sabbatical.
Is he actually studying? Do you know? Is he doing a study?
No, I think he's at. I think he's probably right now. What time is it? I think he's doing the Small World thing at Disneyland.
Yeah, right, I see. But it's a sabbatical.
It's
not
a sabbatical.
Vacation.
Yeah. So
anyway, churches become way too busy, and you found an article from your friend Tom Rainer. He wrote a few years ago, and it's just as pertinent today as it was then.
Right, boy, busyness is a man. It is a burden on pastors and on churches. And you know, I remember somebody one time said we need to make sure we have enough margin in our life to be able to spend time with the Lord, to be able to do things that we're not planning to do. So many times, churches, we just absolutely book stuff right out to the margins. And so if something comes up that's an opportunity for us, we don't have any time to do it.
Yeah.
Our people don't have time to do anything. You know, you've got grandkids. Mm-hmm. I've got grandkids. Kyle, one day, will have grandkids.
Man, I hope so.
Okay. But, you know,
my
kids are in their 40s now, almost. Late 30s, early 40s. Your kids are what, 60 now? Is that about right?
Well, almost. That's the youngest one is almost 60.
But when my boys were little, organized sports was maybe two nights a week, maybe one day of practice, and maybe one day a game, maybe. And it didn't last very long. You know, season was pretty short. But now, my grandkids, it's like, it's two nights a week is practice, two nights a week are games, and they're all playing on different teams, so every single night of the week, the family's going from one ballpark to another ballpark, and practice is really lengthy, it's not just short anymore, so it's all hyped up, right?
And they're, a lot of the sports are year-round.
They're year-round.
I mean, so there is no stopping.
No, there's no stopping.
Yeah.
And you play on Sundays. You should never play on Sundays.
All the time.
So all of that to say, people's lives are busier. Also, we work 24/7 now, and we're online 24/7 now. We don't have the rhythms we had 30 years ago, working 9 to 5, being home on Saturday and Sunday. So people's lives are busier, and the churches have become busier,
mm-hmm.
right? And not always productive, but busy. So Rainer is going to help us here. Your church may be declining. It may be small in number. You may be having all kinds of problems, but you may be too busy. Right?
Regardless of the size.
Regardless of the size. I did say that.
And the thing that I found working in small churches, particularly when you're working with rural churches.
Yes.
Because, I mean, they've got the farm element. You know,
right.
And that's a critical issue at several times during the year.
That's right.
But now you pile in all the other things that the kids are doing at school and the clubs and the social meetings. We had a rule when our kids were growing up. You could play one sport at a time and be a member of one club at a time.
Did you? How'd that rule work?
It worked out great.
Did it really?
It worked out great. And so we were busy, but we weren't too busy.
Right.
And but, you know, that's all changed.
Oh, totally.
You know, and my kids now, with their kids, you know, they don't have that rule.
No.
Now, they do kind of try, you know, to get some semblance of order into what they're doing. But another thing, too, is now everybody, you mentioned this, but everybody's working. Husband and wives are working now.
They're both working,
and sometimes the kids are working.
That's right.
So let's talk about churches that are way too busy.
Number one. Are you ready?
What? Who are you yelling at?
I don't know. I'm just trying to stay awake.
Man, I mean, I'm on the other side of the room. But
my lower lip started quivering there.
I can hear y'all just fine.
I'm just trying to wake myself up, all right? It's early in the morning. They don't realize we're doing this at 9:30 in the morning. Okay, I've only been out of bed for 15 minutes. All right, here we go.
9:30 somewhere.
9:30 somewhere. Okay, anyway, number one reason churches are too busy. This is so good. Are you ready? Activities become synonymous with ministry.
Ooh, yeah.
Rainer says, I'm familiar with a mission support group in a church. It includes 30 people representing 20% of the weekly worship attendance. The group is very active with fellowships, meetings, speaker events, but the mission support group has never supported missions. They've been involved in everything but missions. Yeah. And, you know, we're called a mission support group. We have meetings, we have fellowships, but we've never really supported missions. It's like I said before, it's like bunch of old men who like to get together and talk about fishing but never get in a boat, you know, and all that activity makes us feel like we're doing something, but we're not really doing anything.
Particularly if you couch it in spiritual terms.
Okay.
You know, and we do that, you know, it's like, let's pray about this issue, you know, and all of a sudden that becomes an avenue to talk about who knows how many other things.
That's true.
And so there's no real focus.
We lose the focus, yep.
And this is one of the primary marks that Mark has talked about for dying churches, anesthetize the pain of death with an overabundance of activities, right? Yep. So you go in and they would say, no, we're not dying. Look at all the activities
we're busy,
that we have.
Right, we still have committee meetings. We still meet three times a week, Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. We still do all of our regular scheduled events, and we stay busy. And the fact of the matter is, with fewer people, you've got fewer people doing more stuff and staying busier all the time.
Yes, a church, you know, a church of 50 still trying to do the activities of a church of 200.
And check this out. I had a pastor friend one time, and I don't know how well it went, but I remember he had a relatively large church, by large, my standards, 200-300 people. That's large in my world. And he said, you know what? Coming up this year in December, we're going to go dark in December. And what we're going to do is we're not going to do anything other than Sunday morning worship between December 1st and New Year's 1st, other than Christmas Eve service and Sunday morning worship. We're not going to have any musicals. We're not going to have any dramas. We're not going to have any parties. We're going to ask our people to go to other churches, go to their musicals if they want to go. Make sure you go to your family gatherings. Make sure you go to your office parties and represent who you are in Christ. Engage the culture, engage the community. But we're going to take the church off of your plate during the busy, busy month of December.
Was he still the pastor on January 1st?
No, I think they fired
okay.
him. It sounded good. But, you know, again, December can be a crazy busy month. Every Sunday school class has a party. You may have a cantata of some kind, and you've got all kinds of practice for that. And then you've got all the other things that go on in school and in your work. And so sometimes it's not a bad idea to say, can we back off? Do you know, and not to confuse busyness with productivity.
Well, I think you have to create the parameter. What is the eternal value of what we're doing here?
Yes.
And so if I can't define the eternal value of this, then we shouldn't be doing it.
I know. All right, number two, programs and ministries are added regularly, but seldom or ever deleted.
Oh, yeah.
So over 30 years, we've added all of these different things, but we don't ever stop anything.
Yeah, once it's on the books, you know.
Yeah, so we got all these things going. And, you know, I wake up in a new world every day, right? Kyle's on our team at the North American Mission Board, and those guys know me. Every time we get together, I got a new idea, and this is the best idea I have ever had in my whole life, and we need to do this.
Or at 11 o'clock at night.
Or 11 o'clock at night, I'll text everybody saying, we've got to do this. And, you know, Jimbo, who's our executive director, says, you know, we probably do, but we do all these other things we wanted to do, you know. Now we just can't add one more thing necessarily unless we undo something. We don't have the bandwidth for it. Oh, yeah, we do. I said, we can add this. It won't be a big deal. And we don't, but again, you just keep adding and adding and adding, and you never remove anything, especially in churches. Once somebody gets a program, how many times have you heard someone say, well, you can't stop that. That's my program. That's my ministry. Mm-hmm. That's where I find my meaning, which is a warning sign anyway, if that's what they tell you. But again, churches are seldom good at stopping doing anything. Well, we can't quit doing that. Somebody might. I remember Sunday night church, right? I remember Sunday night church.
Oh, training union.
Yeah, training union. Okay, so my first church, very first church, way up in North Missouri. You remember this. I was, Dan and I, I was the first pastor of a little church in Liberty, Missouri, called Eastside Baptist Church. And when I say little, dude, there was like four people and me.
It was two families.
Yes, two families.
Two couples. Yeah.
Two couples and me. And we met above a vacuum cleaner store on the square in Liberty. And I was a freshman at William Jewell. And I was their pastor for a while. And they were waiting for Dan to get up here from Florida. So when Dan got up here, he changed the name to Liberty Community Fellowship. That was 1978. That was pretty weird.
That's
back
radical.
Then.
That's radical, yeah.
Pretty radical. And the church grew a little bit. It did. Mm-hmm. It grew. So then I was called to become the pastor of a rural church up in North Missouri. And I remember you took me in your basement. You were living in a little duplex there in Liberty. You were a student too, but you were married and older than me. And you took me down in your basement and you had this serious talk with me. And you said, you know, I don't think you're ready to go pastor this church yet. I said, what do you mean, Hurst? Well, I've just seen a lack of maturity in you and not following
through.
I did
not say that.
Yes, you did. I would never forget that. I would never forget that. And you know what? You were right. I was immature and I didn't follow through, but I went anyway. You were just being kind. You were trying to help me.
And you had a good ministry there.
Because I had a great uncle who was the pastor up there who stayed on and he mentored me.
Yeah.
So here's the point of that story, all right? So Sunday mornings, we have 40, 50 people up there. They want me to stay all day Sunday and preach on Sunday night. So then I have four or five folks come back on Sunday night.
Mm.
And so I remember saying one time in a business meeting, I said, you know, it doesn't really do me any good to stay here all day Sunday and be here Sunday night for four or five of us. Why don't we not have Sunday night church? And the only deacon we had said, well, what if somebody's looking for a church that night? This is what he said. And they come here and the doors are locked. And then they get depressed and they kill themselves on the steps of the church. They can't make this up, right?
Oh, no.
And so we just can't not have church on Sunday night. So they step having church on Sunday night. You know, nobody ever came that depressed.
Oh, no.
I left that depressed a few nights. Yeah. But
what, was this guy who made that point? Would he show up on Sunday night?
Yeah, he'd actually come.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll give him that. He'd actually come.
Disney has a great strategy. You've heard of it. It's called Low Ride Out.
I have not heard of that.
You know, the idea is that once a ride quits producing as many riders, you know, they exchange that ride for a new one. They
find
a new ride. So it, as long as it's produced, people are still using the ride, they keep it. But once it reaches a certain level of activity, low activity, they can it. And they bring in another ride. They replace it.
Wow, that's what we need to do in church.
And churches need to learn that strategy.
It's low ride out.
Low ride out. You know, if the people aren't coming to ride the ride, you know.
By the way, we remained extremely close friends, Dan and I, and business partners in many ways.
Yeah.
None of it made any money.
Yeah.
But even though he did share that with me, I was 18 years old. Mm. I didn't know from what. And he was right. I was full of arrogance and thought I could do everything. And I needed to... You were kind to me. And you loved me and cared for me through that. But, you know, sometimes you just need an older person to just say, dude, you're not all you think you are. And when you get up there, you need to know that. So I appreciate that.
Well, you just touched on really the third thing here that Rainer talks about, and that is that programs and ministries become sacred cows.
Yes.
And just like that Sunday night service, that was a sacred cow.
Yeah, we can't quit doing that. They, you know, it's a pet project or it means something to somebody. And so we always say around this world that we live in here and Revitalize and Replant, you never make decisions based on not losing people. You make decisions based on doing what Jesus wants you to do with his church.
Yeah.
And so really, worrying about sacred cows is you're worrying about losing somebody if we quit doing that. You're not deciding we shouldn't do that because it's not productive. We have to not eliminate that because somebody will be upset if we eliminate it.
What about the person that says, though, that, we don't need to get rid of it, we just need to fix it?
Yeah.
What do you do then?
I think at times you say, you know, why don't fixing it is probably get rid of it. I think many times when they say that, it's just a way to hang on and not really do the surgery that needs to be done. Some things are way beyond fixing, and they just need to be replaced, or they need to be done away with, or they've had their opportunity, and it's time to move on to something else. You know, we've said all the time, guys, that when you're talking about churches that are healthy, and by healthy, I mean they make disciples who make disciples, they result in the community being noticeably better, they are productive for the kingdom. These are churches, are you ready, that evaluate every year everything they've done. And if they realize it's not meeting the needs of the people, it's not making disciples, it's not resulting in the kingdom being expanded, we quit doing it. And that's a hard decision, especially for normative-sized churches to make, because normative-sized churches are so highly relational. Everybody's connected to everybody. You know, in a larger church, the relationships are not nearly as strong because the church is just so large. You got 1,000 people. You know, you can't know everybody, but in a church of 30 people, you know everybody. And if you're just going to start removing some activities and ministries that mean a lot to a few of those people, it can be very damaging to relationships. So I'm not suggesting this is easy, but I am suggesting that we can be too busy because A, we assume that activity means productivity. B, programs and ministries are added regularly, but not often removed. And C, as we just said, many times programs and ministries maybe are not effective, but man, they mean something to somebody, and we can't quit them. Number four.
This is an interesting point.
Say it. What is it?
The alignment question is not asked on the front end.
What does that mean?
Well, does it line up with what we are all about?
Well, do we even know what we're all about?
Exactly.
That's the big question.
And you know, it really, what it comes back to is, okay, how involved are you in this ministry? Not you as a pastor. What your people?
Yep.
And because a lot of times you can fix these problems by letting them make the discovery instead of telling them. And you just alluded to this with these churches that, you know, once a year they go through the process and they comb through it and everything.
Yeah.
Well, that's the people making the
that's
decision.
That's true. That's true.
You know, that's the choice. How productive is it, and does it align with our mission and our strategy?
But if we don't have a mission and a strategy that's specific and understandable.
That's deadly.
In other words, if your mission and strategy is to have a pattern of making disciples that make disciples that result in your community being noticeably better and the kingdom being expanded, then you need to look at everything you do through that lens. It's not that what you do may not be good. For example, you may have a soccer player who's supposed to be a forward, and he's supposed to score, right?
Mm-hmm.
He can control that ball. He can handle that ball. He can pass that ball. He can run up and down the field faster than anybody else. He is a great locker room player. Everybody loves him. He's got a great personality, but he's never scored a goal. You know, he's there to score goals. The point of the game isn't to run up and down the field. It isn't to have a great locker room personality. The point of the game is to put the ball in the net.
Yeah.
You know, you may have somebody in your church, and you may have organizations, you may have programs that are great, they kind of run well, everybody likes them, but they don't put the ball in the net.
Right.
It's not making disciples. It's not seeing the community noticeably better. It's not expanding the kingdom. It may be good, it may be fun, it may even be enjoyable, but it's not putting the ball in the net. At some time, you got to ask yourself, what does it mean in our church to put the ball in the net? And if it's not happening, we can't keep doing that.
And you have to ask the people that, don't you?
You do. Did that make sense at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was very passionate about it. I just want you to know that.
Well, this is one of the points that Rainer will make in Simple Church, right? You need to have a strategy. Know who you are. Know what your mission and purpose is.
Yeah, okay.
And then you don't add anything that doesn't align with that mission, right?
Okay, we don't plan these podcasts out. We don't even know what we're going to talk about till we sit down. So these things just kind of come to us extemporaneously.
But they're brilliant.
Oh, they are.
Admit
they got to go in the podcast hall of fame. But guy named Borden is a church consultant from out west, and he had a huge influence on my life at the time I was beginning to do replanting. He really did. And I remember I went to a church consult one time with one of his trained consultants. Are you ready for this? Went to a large church, and they were having some real problems and declining. And I know Borden said that you got to look at your staff. And they were looking at paid staff. You've got children's staff, paid children's staff, or paid youth staff, or paid discipleship staff, or whatever it is. You've got staff people. And the church is in decline. And basically, he says, you know, you've got to look at these staff people and say, our goal is to reach children and families. Okay, that's what you're here to help us do. Not that you're going to go do it yourself, but you're here to help design strategies and engage current members to find ways to reach children and families with the gospel. All right? So you've got, you know, 6 months to a year to come up with some strategies. We come back then. Okay, what are your strategies? What's your approach? And he said, basically, we have what we call a preseason. Now, this is hard, guys. I'm not saying you're going to do this. I'm not saying half of you even think this is a good idea. I'm just telling you what I heard. He told the staff, we're going to have like a preseason, like preseason football. None of this counts. So for 6 months, we just want you to do what you've planned to do. None of it counts. We're not counting. But 6 months from now, we're in the regular season. And he said, you've got 18 months to show that the paying your salary here really does benefit the purpose of this church.
Whoa, I like that.
And if it doesn't, we're done. You know, you got 6 months here to, it's preseason. We're not going to hold it. You got it, because you're getting paid a salary to do this. And we cannot continue to pay you a salary if you're not seeing the results of the work the church is paying you to do. Yeah. Churches don't function that way.
Right.
We can't get rid of him. He's a good guy. Maybe he is. Right. Maybe he's, but he's not putting the ball in the net, yeah, so to speak.
And you're not saying he's not qualified for ministry. All you're saying is it's not a good fit for this church.
It's not,
in the direction that we're
going. It's not aligning with, yes, what we're, in other words, if you know what we're to be doing and it doesn't align with that, why are we doing it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the whole point of Rainer. Yeah. You can, the things may be good, but they're not what we're supposed to do. Yeah. We've got to know what we're doing and why we're doing it, and then we got to evaluate, is it getting done? And we don't, churches don't do that. We don't do that well.
And so that leads to this next point, which will all often complicate the very strategy of ministry, and that is, Rainer calls it silo behavior among, ooh, the different ministries of the church. Yeah. The idea being that you take something that just saps the energy from the other ministries.
Yes.
And so this single ministry becomes its own entity.
Have you seen that so many times? You know, I see it in schools. Churches will have a Christian school, which is a fine thing to do. But after a while, the Christian school becomes the tail that wags the dog. Yeah. In other words, it all becomes a Christian school. Or, yes, it could even be a youth program, and the youth program becomes really big, and the youth program sort of does it. Or a children's ministry can do that, or a music ministry can do that. And before long, it's not a holistic thing. It is one particular entity carries more weight and far more responsibility than it probably should based on the overall strategy of the church. And then each one becomes siloed, and then as Rainer says, each one becomes busy in their own world, because here's what's happening. They see the value in what they're doing by how busy they are and how much budget they get, yep, mm-hmm, right? So when you create those silos, we're competing for time, for volunteers, for church budget, and we're not all working together for one common end. We're trying to protect our turf.
And by the way, it may not be an ongoing ministry that we're talking about. It could be a program that your church does once a year.
Yes.
For example, at our church, we used to do a pageant every Christmas. It was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, was it
the best Christmas pageant ever?
No, it was huge.
It was huge.
It was huge.
It was huge.
It was like a Broadway production.
Yeah. You know?
And it just sapped the energy of the entire congregation, because, I mean, there were hundreds of people involved in this thing. And it took weeks to put that thing together. So what would happen is, by the time we got to the holidays, everybody was dreading, oh, we're going to have to do this. But we do this because thousands of people come to it, you know.
Right.
And it was like, it just ate our lunch.
Yeah.
And eventually somebody had the guts to say, let's review this.
Right. No, I totally agree. And those are hard things to review. Yeah. All right. Number six, a lack of evaluation processes. Most churches have an annual budget process, which they say, you know, what's our money? What do we need to spend it on? Very few of them have an annual program assessment. Yep. You know, do we still need this? How can we improve it? Mm-hmm. Does it need to be removed? Does it need to be added? Those kinds of things. You know, oftentimes if a church doesn't have any children's at all, that, and you believe me, we work with a lot of dying churches that have almost no children, and you look at their church budget, they got nothing in the budget for children. You look at their church program, they got nothing in the program for children. You say, why don't you have anything in your budget or program for children? Well, because we don't have any children. You go, that's why you need to put money in there and have a program. That's why you need to do something, right? And so sometimes our evaluation is just opposite of what it ought to be. Yep. We keep doing the things that aren't working, and we don't do the things that might work.
Yeah.
And so that's poor evaluation. Number seven, ministry becomes facility-centered. In other words, if it's not happening on the church facilities, it's not really ministry. As a consequence, we keep our members too busy to do ministry in their own setting. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about that?
Well, what happens is we feel like we can control the ministry if it's in our four walls.
No, that's true.
That's where it starts.
Right.
And so we want people to show up at the church.
Right.
We don't want them to be the church. We want them just to show up at the church. You know. And that's what happens. It's like, well, we have the facility, we have the space, you know, we have the time, we have the people. Let's bring them all here instead of going out and being the church
in the field. The Great Commission is as you go, yep. Right? Well, that means as you go at work, as you go in your third places, as you go among your family. Well, if we never give them time to as you go, if they're always coming to our church building, which is how I grew up, yeah. I mean, it was simple. Look, this is the way it was. If you were a deacon or a leader at our church, you were there Sunday morning, most of the time early Sunday afternoon for some kind of meeting, and then Sunday night. And then usually one Monday night you were there for church council meeting, or you had finance committee meeting or deacons meeting. And then Wednesday night was a dinner, started at like 5 o'clock, and then you would have choir practice, Bible study, missions act. The whole Wednesday night was there. And then Thursday night was visitation, right? But, you know,
I'm worn out just listening to this.
But this is how we grew up. So when do you have time to maybe join a men's bowling league full of, you know, unchurched men that you get to spend, you know, two nights a week with these guys, you know, finding out about their spiritual condition and being Jesus in that place? When do you have, we don't give our people margin to do those kinds of things.
And I think this is a unique challenge in declining churches that have buildings that are far bigger than what they need, right?
Yes.
So, you know, you have, Mark, you and I have both been there, sanctuaries of 600, 700 people with 30 people gathered on Sunday morning. You have these enormous buildings. And I think the idea is, well, we have all this space.
Yeah.
Why don't we meet here?
Right.
Also, why
meeting
don't we
here,
use this space?
Meeting here, Kyle, means we don't have to engage the world.
Ooh.
We're still doing church. We're being good Christians, but that world is really weird out there.
Yeah.
And we don't have to engage that world. And, you know, at Warnell, when I was there, we said our mission was to be a member of Warnell, a covenant member, meant that these things, three things would be important to you. Corporate worship, that you would be our weekly corporate worship unless you were prevented from it. Number two, you would be involved in some form of small group in our church. And number three, and this was the biggie, you would make service a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And service was not simply serving the church. It meant serving your neighborhood, serving your community, serving some volunteering somewhere. I want Christians to volunteer to teach, to coach Little League. I want Christians to look, I've been going to my grandkids' softball games. We need Christian softball coaches mm-hmm. for children, for girls. Can I tell you that?
Yep.
We need Christians out there on the field coaching these kids. I don't mean upward basketball. That's fine. I'm talking about just regular city leagues. You need Christian influences there. Man, I would, if I got a strong Christian mother, I would rather have her coach that girls' softball league in her community than have her to come to some committee meeting at our church once a week, and she can't coach. Go out there and do that. Give them margin to make service a lifestyle, and if you're having everything you do on the church property, they're not going to have time to do that.
Let's wrap it up with the final point that that Rainer talks about, and that is that one of the significant issues that we have to deal with, and the reason the church has become too busy, is a lack of courageous leadership.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's all on you, isn't it?
It is. It takes courage as a leader to say, no, we're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm. But
it takes no courage to say, okay, yeah, let's try that. It takes a lot of courage to say, we don't have time, we don't have the resources, it doesn't fit our strategy.
But it also takes wisdom. And so when we talk about tactical patience, right? So what we're not saying in this podcast is you need to go axe all the programs that don't align with what you want to do.
Well, that's true.
But so there may be some things that you need to end. There may be some things that you just need to allow to die.
That's right.
And you need to have the wisdom to know what those things are in your church.
And you aren't the one that does it.
It's right.
You lead the people to do that. And, you know, that's leadership.
And to wrap it all up, finally, if something good comes along that we need to do, if we are so busy, we don't have any margin to do it, it won't get done. Mm-hmm. So not only does busyness just wear us down and perhaps keep our people from being able to be engaged in their communities, busyness may very well be the thing the adversary uses to keep us from doing exactly what Jesus wants us to do right now, because after all, we're just too busy. And one last thing, every time Jesus is interrupted in the New Testament, he embraces that interruption as an opportunity. Mm. And I think if we're really busy, we don't like interruptions.
Yeah.
And so we've got to be able to live to where it's okay to be interrupted from what we want to do to see what God may be doing right here and right now in front of us. And so there's a lot of New Testament teaching in that. You could do a whole sermon series on the interruptions of Jesus. All right.
Wow. What a podcast. I didn't know it was going to... We took a little longer than we normally take.
We were pretty busy.
We were busy. Busy. But I hope you'll join us again. We promised it to be shorter the next time. And now that I'm getting older, I am getting shorter.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.